If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. Okay, today, you guys, we have a good one. It's an exclusive. This guy has not spoken publicly since his hit Bravo show, Shaws of Sunset, was canceled. Today, we hear from Mike Shuhead. He's open. He's honest. He gives us the behind the scenes on the show cancellation, what it was like to be on the show, what happened with his run-in with the law, his love life, what he's doing now. He also discusses if he believes in this reality reckoning, if he's Team Bethany or Team Bravo. It was so interesting to have this hour with Mike, and I'm so excited to bring it to you. So sit back, let me know your thoughts. You are not going to be disappointed. Get ready for Mike Shuhead from Shaws of Sunset. Hi, Mikey. I'm so happy that you're here. It's such an honor and a pleasure. Welcome to Misunderstood.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So I really want to know from the beginning, how did Shaws of Sunset come to pass? Like, how did it get approached? How did you get approached, and why did you do it?
So I was living in Las Vegas, and I spent all my 20s in Vegas. So from the time I was about 21, I dropped out of law school, moved to Vegas to pursue a career in real estate. Market was booming, was making great money. Market crashed. And I came back home with my tail between my legs, like thinking, okay, what the hell am I going to do with my life now? You know, like the real estate market's dead. But I had saved up just enough money where I could survive, but I wasn't thriving. And I convinced my middle brother, who was a dentist, to move in with me. And I found us a house in the Hollywood Hills because I wasn't going to move back with my parents. Right. So I have a house in the Hollywood Hills. I'm driving home one day, and on the side of the road is this guy, Sammy, Big Sam from season one of Shaws of Sunset, standing on the side of the road. And I've known this guy for years. You know, we partied together, you know, got nuts, girls, all this type of shit. He's a really fun guy. But one thing I knew about Sammy was that he talks a lot. So if you were going to speak with him, it's going to be an hour conversation because he has so much to say all the time. So I saw him and I thought he didn't see me because I zipped by and he starts yelling my name, Mike, Mike. I'm like, I was going to ignore him. Then he calls me. He's like, come back. I need to talk to you. And I drive back down and he's like, hey, man, we're filming this new reality show. They don't have a name for it yet, but it's about Persians in LA and you'd be perfect for it. And I'm like, oh, hell no. I heard about this. So-and-so is going to be on it. I want nothing to do with it. I want to be anonymous. He took it upon himself to give the producers my phone number anyways. So this kid, Jesse, who was the creator of the show, who worked for Ryan Seacrest, kept bugging me, called me about 15 times. And every time I said to him, I don't want to do it. And then finally, Ryan Seacrest reaches out to me and says, hey, Mike, I heard you're a stud and you're good looking. And he's charming me. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is Ryan Seacrest telling me all these things. I just came back from a very fulfilled career where I'd lost everything. And this guy's complimenting me. He kind of like baited me. And I was like, all right, I'll sit down with you. And we sat down and he talked to me about the Kardashians and all this other shit that was happening. And I was like, all right, this is my second wind of life. This is where my opportunity is going to come from.
Your second act.
Yeah. So, okay, let's give it a shot. And before I know it, I'm in some house in Studio City in a backyard with a bunch of people, some who I had known, but not really close with, and a lot of strangers, all Iranian. And they just interviewed me and we created this little sizzle that they wanted to show the producers of the show to see if we're right for this new show that they're going to be producing.
So the people that they picked for the sizzle reel, was that the people that ended up being on the actual show?
Yeah. So it started with like, man, there was like 20 people there that night. And then from that 20, you know, after we were done, we left. Then they brought us back together and it was a dwindled down group of people. And then it got dwindled down more. And then we filmed the show. And then once we filmed the show, they gave us 6 episodes. From the 6 episodes, they picked who was on the first season of the show.
And what was your relationship like with the people that were the core OGs of Shahs of Sunset?
So Reza is... he just turned 50 in August. Okay. I am 44. Mm-hmm. Right. So if people put two and two together, they realize that we were not in school together. Right. It's impossible. But we, you know, the Iranian community is small. So we knew of each other. Mm-hmm. Right. But I was not close with any of these people except for Gigi. I grew up with her. She was like my little sister. I was best friends with her sister, Layla. And the rest of us, we were acquaintances.
Right.
But when you start filming a show like we did, where the premise is, hey, you guys are really, really close, we kind of got the idea, like, if we don't give the network what they want, the show's not going to work, because they kept embedding that into our brains. Hey, these checks don't come cheap. You guys mm-hmm. have to listen to us. We know what we're doing. Just follow what we're telling you, and it's a path, and we're going to lead you to the path for success. So obviously, after spending hours and hours and hours and hours together weekly, as we filmed the show, we got close, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was like high school. You know, you create little cliques, and then within those cliques, there's other cliques, and you know, we became close because it was like, wow, look what we're doing for the culture. We are creating a show about Iranians. Where once upon a time, growing up, I would hide that I was Persian, right? I'd tell people, no, I'm Mexican, I'm Italian. If I met a girl, I was like, yeah, I'm Italian. They're like, but your last name is Shohed. Like, what is, no, it's Shohed. You know, make up shit just to like pretend to play the role because being Iranian wasn't cool. Mm-hmm. And when we started filming, the production crew was so excited. Like, dude, your culture is amazing. The food, the music, the culture. So I was like, wow, you like, it gave me a new perspective on what people thought. So I became proud of the show. So I wanted to create something that the world would find to be interesting and creative, but also full of drama and sexiness and all this other shit, so that we create something that will survive in this world of television where you have so many different, options. I wanted people to watch our show.
Yeah, of course.
And we played ball.
When you guys weren't filming, how often were you actually choosing to spend time with each other? I mean, I've done a couple of reality shows in the past, and I found that when I'm on a show, I get so immersed with the people I'm with. After 3 weeks, you feel like they're family. Like, I was spending all my time with them even when we weren't shooting. Is that what happened with you guys?
So yeah, I'm trying to take myself back to season one, because you know, after 10 years of all the shit I've been through with them, Mm-hmm. I'm a little jaded, but in the beginning, it was incredible. Like, Reza was like my big bro, you know? Him being gay, being Iranian, being Jewish, and half Muslim. So he understood so many facets of life because he had dealt with so much that I had this respect for him because he was out, he was proud, he was successful, he was flamboyant, he dressed well. So like I became super, super tight with him. And I remember like in the beginning, they gave us, you know, it was a part of a group chat. So all of us were texting each other. And MJ, before she met me, would like, she'd call me like, hey, Mike, with like her little sexy voice and like flirting with me and like wanting to like, you know, like kind of, we were flirting with each other like we were going to hook up, you know, it was weird. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, me and Gigi, obviously, we had our relationship and we're friends. And I knew her since she was a little girl. And obviously me and Sammy, you know, he would make fun of me. He's like, you see, and you didn't want to be a part of the show. And now look, you're going to get so many girls and you're going to make money. And, you know, he always had his chip on his shoulder about that. And we would joke about that. But we all became very close because, like I said, we were filming for 10, 15, 20 hours sometimes a day, mm-hmm. weeks on end, Wednesday through Sunday, every week for months. So mm-hmm. you became close to these people because you spend the majority of your time with them. I spent more time with them than I did with my own family.
And
really, like brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And like during this time, did you decide to keep your day job? Or were you trying to establish who you were as a real person in LA once you were there? Or you kind of let that go and just did the show?
No, I mean, the first season we made like, I think like 3,000 an episode or something, you know, mm-hmm. you know, like nothing. Mm-hmm. So if I was just going to live off that, I'd be like impoverished, you know? So yeah. I was still working, selling real estate, hustling, doing what I could. And at the same time, you know, being a rock star by midweek till the weekend, because it was like no sleep, drinking, drama, you know, creating great storylines, you know, based on, you know, I don't want to say it was lies or lives on the show, but no one's life is really that exciting all the time. It's not, mm-hmm. I don't know anyone that's always doing something. And they had us going on excursions and hanging out and dinners and staying up all night and then going back to filming early in the morning. So I was trying to balance both lives, but yeah, it was hard. But no, I definitely had to do more in order to survive, especially in LA, living in a house in Hollywood Hills. It's not cheap.
And at the beginning, was it helping your career that all of a sudden the show was taking off and everyone knew your name and knew your face? Was that helpful for real estate?
Yeah, it was actually. It helped with recognition, right? But the way they portrayed me season one was, you know, Mike lost it all and he's the underdog and he's coming back, which I guess was truth. But then like people, they made some of the people on the show look more opulent and like they had more money. Mm-hmm. And those people, some of them really knew how to play into that. And I was just like, yo, I'm just me. I had it, I lost it, but I'm making it again, but I didn't lose everything. So it's like, I didn't understand it because I didn't watch any reality TV. And my crew of friends that were on the show with me would be like, you don't understand how this reality show thing works. You're not doing it right.
What do you think that meant?
They wanted me to be a student of reality TV. So you have mm-hmm. to know how to bring the drama, when to turn it up, when to turn it down. And with me, I'm a Libra. I'm typically very calm. I like to be even keel. I like harmony. Mm-hmm. You know, I would always get reprimanded when the cameras were off, like, hey man, you're not being dramatic enough.
Right.
Stop the act. I'm like, what act? You don't even know me. Like we became friends. Real close friends just recently. You don't know who I am. I'm not a confrontational human being. So then I started to realize, because I kept getting told, if you don't bring the drama, you're not going to make it.
Right.
You're only as good as the camera time you get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get it. That's true. So in some ways. I have so many questions surrounding that though. Like, because I, you know, in preparation for seeing you, I looked at a lot of clips over the arc of all the seasons and how you were portrayed. I really noticed that everyone has their moments of anger, a lot of moments of anger and passion. There's a lot of that going on throughout all the seasons with different people, right? And a lot of it has to do with friendships that, you know, people seem really upset that their friendships are being betrayed, and that the trust is being betrayed, the boundaries are being betrayed. And for you, what I saw is that a lot of times you were the peacemaker for, you know, at least the beginning of it. You really struck me as the person that would get involved to try and calm everyone down. So as we get to sort of the end of the show, you know, to have you be the one that got into trouble legally seemed, you know, interesting, shocking. I don't know what the word would be to me, because I didn't see that in you. Do you know what I mean? Like anyone else you would bring up, I'd be like, yeah, I get it. But I didn't know that I saw that in you, even though you were portrayed in a number of different ways. And we'll get to that in a minute. But I guess what I want to talk to you about is, how do you feel like the show portrayed you, and in what ways do you think you fed into that, and in what ways you tried to really give your own narrative? This blew my mind when I found out, but did you know that over 80% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Seriously, think of how many free trials you subscribe to that you've probably never canceled. That's why I'm such a big fan of Rocket Money. So for me, I signed up. It took less than 3 minutes. I put my information in and out spouted all this stuff that I had no idea about. I had no idea that in the course of a year, I actually, and you guys, this is a true story, spent over $6,000 on subscriptions. It gave me a full list. It told me all the things that I was spending it on, and I could tell from there what I wanted to get rid of, what I didn't know existed. And then the cool thing is they help you cancel these subscriptions. Not only that, I could see how much I was spending in different categories, health and wellness, food and beverages. I was surprised to see how much my daughter Wyatt Lily was spending at Starbucks every month. It's a huge amount. So I'm going to be having a conversation with her about that. With Rocket Money, you can easily cancel the subscriptions you don't want with just the press of a button. No more long hold times or annoying emails with customer service. Rocket Money does all the work for you. And I can tell you, I've personally done this myself. It was super easy, and I'm already saving money. Stop wasting money on things you don't use, cancel your unwanted subscriptions, and manage your money the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/understood. That's rocketmoney.com/understood. rocketmoney.com/understood.
So in the beginning, they allowed me to, you know, because they're trying to feel us out, right? And they invested in us. So they knew that they could, in ways, manipulate us to do what they want. Because once the money started to get good and you wanted that money to keep rolling in, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, the producer who was smiling and pulling you aside and talking to you, their words became more like Bible, you know, like, man, I got to listen to this person. Oh, this person has a pedigree where they did X, Y, and Z show, mm-hmm. and they take those shows into huge franchises. That person obviously wants the best for our show. I should listen to them.
Yeah.
Right. And then I started to lose sight of who I really was, because A, I was listening to them. The cast of the show started to self-produce and create more drama. So mm-hmm. I started to see them for who they really were. Mm-hmm. And then it just started to create animosity between me and them. In the right. beginning, I really wanted everyone to be peaceful and have fun. And I was like, what are you guys doing? You know, this is crazy. And I didn't want our show to be like that. Like I told you, I wanted to represent our culture. Mm-hmm. And after season one, everyone would be like, yo man, you're my favorite on the show. You're the only one that I watch that actually is normal. I was like, no, man, the rest of them are normal. They just, you know, they just act up for the show because I wanted to protect them. Mm-hmm. Right. And they really weren't as crazy as they were coming across on the show. But as time progresses and these people who you become close with, like family, start to betray you and attack you and attack your character and do things behind your back to create drama, you start to get bitter with them. And then mm-hmm. you're forced to still hang out with them and grieve your differences in front of a camera.
Yeah.
Because if you don't tell your story, they will. And these group of nerd editors that sit in an editing bay for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours a day, like watching you, they're getting notes from the network saying, hey, no, do that scene again, but I want them to look this way. I want Mike to look this way. I want Gigi to look this way. So like Gigi in the beginning looked like a knife wielding insane person. Mm-hmm. Right. And then towards the end, they're like, okay, that's not working anymore. We need to change her up a bit. So she became the Wusa calm mother. Right.
I'm just curious though, who was she in reality?
She had those tendencies, obviously, but it wasn't like she was always like pulling knives on people. She also had to, if you knew Gigi, she was a very sweet, loving, kind person who was very soft on the inside, like a coconut, soft on the inside, just had a hard outer shell because she just didn't want to get hurt. But they exploit whatever they want about you. And then God bless our fans. They would take whatever they saw as reality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they didn't think like, yeah, maybe he's not that way. And here's the funniest part. I'll meet people, gym, on the street, wherever. 9 out of 10 times, people will be like, man, I really thought you were an asshole. And then I got to talk to you and you're standing here and you spent 15 minutes talking to me. And I've expressed all these things that are going on in my life. And you've given me insight. You've given me an ear. You're really a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I don't know why you got the idea that I'm an asshole. But I get that all the time. And then I realized, damn, this project that I was part of really did a great job of making me look like something I wasn't.
Right. So I want to talk to you about that concept because, you know, a lot of people say, you know, reality TV makes you look like someone you aren't. And they can, you know, edit you to look a certain way, even though you behave a different way. Do you agree with that?
Okay, so I want to be fair. I don't want to be a victim in all of this. Do I have anger in me? Of course I do, right? It takes a lot for it to come out. Mm-hmm. I don't walk around angry. I walk around smiling. I walk around happy. I'm very optimistic. But, you know, there's times where I get upset, you know? And when people spend that much time with you, they know exactly what buttons to push to trigger you, mm-hmm. you know? And it wasn't necessarily things they did to me. Like one season, you know, Reza went after MJ. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I took their beef and made it my beef because I didn't like the way Reza was handling that situation. Mm-hmm. No money in the world should make you say certain things about people. It'll never go away. And I even posted about that today. Be careful what you tell people because it'll play in their minds forever. Yeah. And it just might've been a moment of anger in your life where you said something that you didn't mean, but that person will carry that with them for the rest of their life. So I try to come from a place of love and kindness, but you know, there was times that I blew up on the show and they exploited that shit. And, oh, Mike has anger problems and Mike said this and that. So yes, they do a good job of making you look like something you're not because they take something very small and they blow it up and continue to play it and then continue to revert back to it. And, you know, it just keeps playing over and over again throughout the entire season because that one clip, if it got a lot of clicks or a lot of viewers, they're like, okay, that's the one. We got to go play it back. And throughout the season, they keep editing. So the show is not formatted and then it comes out. It's formatted and then they make tweaks.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Right. And that's important to, for people to realize. There is a narrative that is created. So you may have some anger in you, which, by the way, a lot of people do. They're passionate, right, about certain things.
And we're passionate people.
Yeah. In certain situations. But they may leave out the part where you're rescuing dogs on the street and you're helping women, old women cross the road or whatever it is. They may just, you know, create this narrative that fits for your character. Also, you had some issues with being loyal with the women you are with, right? So of course they, you know, that is your issue, right? That you're dealing with. But I think that in a reality show, they put the spotlight on stuff like that. And if it's something that's a pattern, you really get stuck with those stigmas, because those are the things that people, it stands out with people, as opposed to the arc of someone. And, you know, as a person, when you meet someone in real life and you get to know them, you see the entire gamut of who that person is. You see everything. But just in a reality show, you just see little snippets, and that's what creates a narrative. And I think that can be what's really dangerous, because then people think they know you based on the smoke and mirrors of what is a narrow vision of reality TV. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better, you know, and I did have infidelity issues. You know, I went through two real relationships on the show, my ex-wife, who we cared about each other. We loved each other, but we weren't in love with each other. And we got married even though we knew we shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And we try to make it work because to keep face for people. And when you're not in a happy relationship, people do things. She did things that I didn't air out because I tried to protect her. Now looking back, I should have brought it up. I didn't. But she did a great job of showing the world, you know, where she ended up and what she ended up doing. And, you know, my laundry was aired out on the show. Hers wasn't. She's an amazing person. We're friends to this day. And, thank God both of our paths ended up in a happy place. She's happy. She's moved on and she's doing her thing. And then with Paulina, that was just, you know, again, so stupid. I feel horrible about it. A lapse in judgment where for one day in the middle of COVID, having text conversations with someone who I'd never met, who I met on Instagram, who started off by like, "Hey, your story really resonated with me. I'm going through a divorce. Can I please ask your opinion?" And she was a pretty girl. And I was like, you know, okay. And then it went from that to baiting me and talking about stuff. And then by the end of the day, just 12 hours of talking, you know, throughout those 12 hours, I was like, whoa, what am I doing? I'm going to get myself in trouble. And I did. It was just stupid. And it got blown out of proportion. And, you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah.
When you're in the fame and you have these beautiful women who want your attention and you're trying to be good, the devil in me got the best of me and I fucked up. And I feel guilty about it to this day. And I realize that I hurt Paulina. I hurt myself. I hurt our families. I wish I can go back in time and fix it. But I realize that, and I'll tell you the truth and be very transparent with you, I did not like myself while I was on the show. I became a human being that resented the show, resented the cast. I resented myself. I hated Ryan Seacrest. I hated Bravo. It was just, when they were like, we're coming back for another season, it was like, oh man, I had anxiety because I was like, fuck, I have to film with these people again for another 3-4 months. What are they going to bring up? How are they going to try to destroy my life this season? How am I going to have to retaliate? And then, okay, I got to get a new car. Okay, I got to get a new place. I got to get new clothes. It was just, it was this thing that I truly did not like anymore. And if you look at me now, like I weigh 190 pounds, I'm fit, I'm more ripped than I've ever been. Mentally, I'm more strong than I've ever been. I read, I journal, I pray. I go to temple, I'm happy, I love myself. And when I was filming, I was fat, miserable. I ate like shit. I didn't work out. I didn't take care of myself. It was just, I was just miserable. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, Pauline would tell me when you're sleeping, I would twitch because I was so nervous because I just, my anxiety was through the roof because I got to a point where this project that I really loved and was so fun became a nuisance in my life. So for the past several seasons, it's been like that.
Right.
When the show ended, and I'm sorry to cut to it, but like when the show ended, I was so happy. I was laughing with the producers on the phone. I was like, thank God. They're like, Mike, did you hear what we just told you? Like, the show has been canceled. I was like, yes, thank you. They go, and the producers are, well, one producer, she's like, wow, you're taking this a lot better than the rest of them did. Some of them actually cried. Like, yeah. I get it. This was a life. It wasn't my life. This was just a project. And I was ready. I was checked out years ago.
Right. So I want to talk about that for a second, because there are a lot of rumors that Shaws of Sunset ended because of what happened with you outside of the show with Paulina and you getting arrested. Do you want to talk on that subject?
Sure. Absolutely. I wish I was more prepared because I would have pulled up the email and shown you. When they called, actually they emailed us, and here's what was happening. So they were casting new people for the show prior to season 10. And we thought season 10 was gonna be our last season. We're all, you know, talking about it and what are we gonna do? It's gotta be the biggest season. And, you know, like we're all plotting and planning and, you know, all that shit. And they would keep giving us updates. Okay, we're doing a casting call and, you know, be prepared for this day. And they would send us emails telling us to prepare for whatever the new season. And, you know, all the ducks have to be in a row for the season to go off without a hitch. We have to, you know, if you're renting, you have to get your landlord to say it's okay to film there. They want to get locations. They want to get releases from all of our family members and all that stuff. So we were preparing for this next season. And then there was a huge lull where they didn't reach out to us for like a few months. And, I remember Reza was very anxious because he's like, man, I don't think we're coming back. They're just going to drop us like that. This is crazy. And lo and behold, one day we get the call. Hey, we need to do a Zoom call with the entire cast. And I'm like, all right, cool. This is it. Like, okay, fuck. We're coming back for another season. And in the email that they sent out, there was four names. Actually, let me see. Hold on. It was Reza, MJ, Gigi on one call, okay, one Zoom call, and then Mike, Nima, Destiny, Shervin on another call, okay? So basically what they did was they were going to give MJ, Gigi, and Reza a spinoff, kind of like Three's Company vibe where he's the godfather of their two children and they're going to do a spinoff, and the rest of us were getting clipped from the show. Okay, which was my thought, because I was like, why would they split it up? This is not normal. So I had a feeling, and you know, they called and that was it. They're like, hey, Mike, we're sorry to break the news to you guys, but you know, the show's ending. It's just getting way too expensive to film. You guys, the show is unionized and, you know, Ryan has to get his cut and you guys are demanding too much money and it just doesn't make sense for us.
And sorry, at that point, how were the ratings? I mean, was it still doing well or was it really falling off?
Yeah, ratings were great, but understand, cable television is a dinosaur now, right? Mm-hmm. You have Netflix and Hulu and all these other streaming networks. where you could watch anything you want at any given time. And then finally, these morons at Bravo were like, oh, shit. Netflix is at 100 million, a billion, whatever they're at. Maybe we should do something like that. And then they finally rolled out Peacock. But then, dude, you're like, you're late to the party, dude. Like, it's already happened. People already have their subscriptions. And now you guys want to do Peacock? Mm-hmm. So they just missed the boat. And they realized, and if you watch this, these new shows that Bravo's come out with, the formula that we created as a group of Iranians and with Ryan and his production team, they just rinse and repeated what we did with like that Karma show, right? Mm-hmm. And like other shows that they created, some flop, some don't. And it's cheap for them because it goes back to paying their talent $3,000 an episode instead of $50,000 an episode.
Right.
And rather take a chance on a $3,000 show. And if it flops, whatever. And if it does, great, great. We have that for a few seasons until they get too big, then we'll clip them and then we'll do the next show. And that's mm-hmm. why you're seeing like shows like Million Dollar Listing New York, that is really not expensive to make mm-hmm. because they're filming at people's properties. They're not really doing anything. They're just following them around. But the shows get clipped because these guys are like, well, you guys are making money off the show. We want more money. And it just doesn't make sense for them financially. So they clip the show. And that's what happened with us.
Okay. So you four got the call saying it was over. What was the call for the other three?
That they were going to get a spinoff, like I told you.
Yeah.
And then they started filming and—
Well, they did. They got that far with filming.
They filmed a sizzle or did some stuff. And I was so happy for them. And they called me like, I'm sorry, Mike. Like, we wanted you to be a part of this. No. I remember MJ called me and she was so upset. Mm-hmm. And Reza too, actually. Reza was, he was like, dude, I really tried. And I was like, no, man, I don't want to do it. I'm good. I want to get back to my normal life.
And where was your relationship with the cast, the seven of you, I guess, so the other six, at this point? Like, how were you feeling about all of them and how were your friendships?
I will always love them, right? Because they were like my brothers and my sisters and I truly, truly, truly care about them. Mm-hmm. But it got to a point where we didn't like each other. We were fighting over dumb shit mm-hmm. because I could not say, well, I guess we're just filming a show. I'll just forgive and forget you. You know, no, you said some really disgusting stuff about my mom, my dad, my brothers, my fiance at the time. You threatened me. Like, I can't just forgive that. I don't care if there was a camera on. At your core, it allowed you to say those things to me. Mm-hmm, I said horrible things back to you.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to forgive me because we're not friends, obviously, if you would do that to me.
Right. And that stuff became real, it seems. Like the words, the anger. And what was interesting to me is that it almost seemed like they resented, or Gigi or whoever, resented when a new woman would come in your life. When Paulina came into your life, it was almost like you had to choose between them and her. And that seemed to cause a big rift. And who do you, you know, when you're in the middle like that, that's so hard.
They honestly hated Jessica when I was dating her. Mm-hmm. And that poor girl put up with so much. Mm-hmm. I would get spoof text messages. They would spoof text message her like, hey, I was with your man last night and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm dating your man. And she's like, you know, and I'm like, but I was with you, babe, last night. Like, we were having dinner together. And she's like, I know, but who are these people? Just, I don't know if it was her or the world, because, you know, as a real estate agent, my number's out in the world. Right. Mm. And it's, and, you know, there's 2 degrees of separation. Like, hey, do you know Mike? Do you have his phone number? Can I get it? You know, or do you know Jessica? Can I get her phone number? And it just started to cause these issues in our lives. And I remember poor Jessica, I think this was like season 3. She's like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
I love you. I care about you. This show is going to destroy you and it's going to destroy our relationship. You choose. Do you want to do the show or do you want to be with me? Mm-hmm. And selfishly at the time, I'm like, don't make me choose. Cause this is my career. Like,
yeah. You know,
this is making me money. This is bringing me appearances. This is helping with my real estate.
Yeah. And at that point, it's part of your identity. I mean, it's how people associate who you are, like it or not. I mean,
I became Mike from Shaws of Sunset instead of Mike on television, mm-hmm. the guy who, this image that was created, this heartthrob sex symbol, like they're trying to create. I carried myself that way throughout life after the show was over. Cause I was like, man, if I slip, then they're going to think I'm a fraud. So I have to live up to that. Right. Yeah. And I tried that, and it's exhausting pretending to be something you're not.
Yeah.
You know, all the time to be on, you know, and God forbid if I was out and I didn't take a picture with somebody. Yeah. Oh, Mike's an asshole. So it didn't matter where I was or who I was with. And imagine at the time I'm dating this young girl. She's 10, 11 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I just want to hang out with my man. And we're sitting having dinner. And in the middle of my dinner, I'm, you know, just eating my food. And someone comes up and is like, can I take a picture with you? And I'm having an intimate dinner with my girlfriend at the time, and my mouth half full. I got to get up and take a picture because otherwise you're going to be deemed like an asshole or you're too good for people. So always had to be on, and it was exhausting because then it was causing me to be anxious. Then that would ripple into my relationship.
Right. And also I feel like that creates a lot of jealousy for women. They get jealous of who's talking to you. They get jealous of the temptation that is being thrown at you, whether or not you accept it or not. But also I feel like sometimes that creates a lot of jealousy of like, he's this person and I'm just the side piece, you know, no matter who I am, I will always be Mike's girlfriend and I will never be more than that. And I think that that can, you know, cause a problem in a relationship.
You know, you've dated some very well-known people, right? And mm-hmm. even though if he would tell you like, you're beautiful, you're mm-hmm. so gorgeous, oh my God, like, I love you, I want to be with you. And regardless of how much he said that, it's just human nature to feel insecure if this yes. person you're with is always getting attention, mm-hmm. right?
And also because everyone thinks they know you. Right. So like everyone thinks they're friends with you or they're enemies with you. Either way, they think they have an intimate connection with you. And for a woman who has an intimate connection with you, I personally would think that that is frustrating, intimidating, because then there's no us. Right. Yes. And we don't have something that's sacred.
Yes. And unfortunately with Paulina, I was like unhealthy obsession with her. I loved her. Like I would look at her and she was, you know, like a supermodel in my eyes, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I loved her and I loved everything about her, where I would, you know, I would walk to the end of the earth for her if she wanted me to, right? Mm-hmm. She had my entire heart. I loved her. I loved her children. I loved her family. And I would express that to her, but because of the attention and the people sliding to the DMs, it made her insecure. And then when I did what I did responding, you know, that devastates a person.
Of course. Yeah.
It devastates a person. And I was so miserable in my own mind that I was trying to cure what was ailing my heart and my mind. Even though I was getting all this attention, I still didn't feel attractive because I wasn't happy with who I was.
Yeah. You still felt empty. To be clear, you didn't cheat physically. You had an emotional relationship. Yeah.
I'm so weird. I just like to know. I like that chase. That's sexy for me. Right. Mm-hmm. Even when we were chatting, there was this little bit of flirting that's happening. Right. And mm-hmm. it's a cute thing that I just do. I can't help it. I've been this way with my entire life. I'll do it with a gay guy. I'll do it with a woman. She could be attractive. She could not be attractive. She could be 80 or, you know, 19. Yeah. I'm just, that's my defense. That's the way I feel good. It gives me this feeling of satisfaction.
Well, and I just would like to say for you, I would think that you find it sexier to feel known. You know what I mean? Like, I think you really like feeling like that connection, or as opposed to like a one night stand. Yeah. Maybe that'll feel good for the moment, but I think it feels good to you. And I totally get this. This is why I recognize it in you. I like when someone really gets to the heart of me for a second, you know,
that's what I like, the attention. I like to know that I'm making that person laugh or that person finds me to be attractive. you know, I've had one night stands in my life, and without a doubt, I feel like crap the next day. Now that I've gotten older, I've realized that the only person that needs to make myself feel good about me is me. Mm-hmm. So that's why I feel more fulfilled. I'm working on my body. I'm working on my health. I'm working on eating right, reading the right books, journaling. I thought that was the softest thing a person could do. Like, what? You write down your thoughts? What? Are you a woman? You know? And then as I got older, now I'm in my feelings. I cry at movies. I cry at the thought that me and Pauline are broken up. I cry at the thought that I don't get to see her kids who I love. I'll be at the gym working out and I'll start tearing because, you know, men are stupid. It takes us longer to become mature. Mm-hmm. This last year, I've really matured in my life. And I realized there's a reaction for all my actions. And unfortunately, I'm dealing with the circumstances of what I've done in the past. And I don't look for that validation anymore. You know, I don't need it. So finally, I guess the ramifications of the show have worn off, where now I'm just myself. You know, I'll sit and talk to somebody if I want to. And if I don't want to, I'm saying, I don't want to take a picture with you right now. And you could say whatever you want about me. I don't care how you feel.
Right.
You're going to have to wait until I'm done with my dinner. If you're still here, then we can take a picture. But I'm not going to get up and serve you and not serve this woman who I'm sitting with, who has given her life to me, been there with me, because I was making her feel like she's valueless. And I didn't even realize that until I became someone who has wisdom and understanding of how I'm making people feel by my actions.
Okay. So let's talk about Paulina, who you brought up a couple of times. Yeah. So, okay. We've established you guys all got the call that the show was ending, and that was before you got in trouble, correct?
Way before. Do you want me to pull up the email?
No, I believe you. It's your word. So I just wanted to have you establish that, because I think, you know, when people listen, when you Google why Shaws of Sunset ended, it says because you got arrested for domestic violence. That's right. What Google says.
Right.
So want you to clear that up.
But Google also says I'm 5'2". Google says my net worth is like $1 million. I don't know how I became this person. And then the rest of the show, those people are worth like $10 million or whatever and whatnot. And I just laugh about this shit because the internet is filled with so many lies. Mm-hmm. Anyone can post anything they want on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's up to you whether you want to believe it to be true or false. But the reality is that the show was 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, canceled way before this incident. I'm 5'11", and I have more than $1 million in my net worth. Let that be told. Woo! You know, like, let me be the bearer of truth for everybody. But again, clickbait. Let's make shit exciting. Oh, this is a perfect opportunity to use Mike's incident that happened and create a reason why the show was canceled.
Okay. So, and now straight from the horse's mouth, let's hear, if you don't mind, what really happened between you and Paulina that night.
Yeah. The night that changed my life forever, it was a Sunday night, and me and Paulina were home. The kids were home sleeping, and she'd been smoking hookah in the house in our theater room, right? With the door closed, and we had doors that lead to the backyard, so she'd like to smoke hookah in there. And the smell of hookah makes me physically ill. I hate it. I didn't want the children to be affected. And again, because I love Paulina so much, I didn't like that she'd smoke hookah. But it was a way for her to relax, and she really enjoyed it. And I tried to cope with it, and I just couldn't. So we would argue about that all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's been happening for a couple of nights in a row. And that Sunday night, we got into a huge argument. And our home is almost 5,000 square feet. It's a huge two-story house. And We had our words with each other, and Paulina's like, get the fuck out of the house. And I'm not getting out. And I'm yelling at her. She's yelling at me. And, you know, things start getting thrown at each other, and we're just yelling at each other. But the yelling is so loud that it's vibrating the house. So Nanny's at home. She's been with us for years. She gets scared. Police are called. Police come to the house. They want to come in. I'm like, there's absolutely no way I'm letting you in my home. The kids are sleeping. It's going to scare the crap out of them. Nothing is wrong. I'll have Paulina come out. She'll talk to you guys, and you guys can go. Mm-hmm. No, we have to come clear the house, he's telling me. I said, dude, I'll bring her out. You could talk to her. Mm-hmm. It's me and her in the house. You're going to scare my kids if you're walking through. You're two police officers walking through my house. My, like 10:30 at night. I'm not going to let it happen. Next thing I know, he thought that I was disobeying him. And before I know it, there's 20 police officers now in front of my house. Sergeant comes and says, look, Mike, he knew my name. Hey, Mike. Mm-hmm. I never told him my name. Hey, Mike, step outside. Let me talk to you. So I step outside. One cop grabs me by the arm and is holding me like I'm a hardened criminal, right? And we have a carport, and you can't get out of the carport unless you have a car. It doesn't open, right? And they knew that because I had to call to physically open the door for them when the other cops came. I had the phone in my hand. So the one cop, the first cop that showed up, goes inside. Little did I know that he knew exactly who I was. So he tells Paulina that night, I know he hit you. I know him because I used to watch him on his show with my ex-wife, and I never liked him. And I'm outside. I'm not hearing any of this. And then he's talking to Paulina. Paulina starts like bawling, like, you know, please leave him alone. You know, everything's okay. They do the walk through the house. He comes out. He goes, cuff him. So they cuff me. And I'm like, why the fuck am I getting arrested? It's like, you punched her. I'm like, dude, I weigh 215 pounds. If I punched this woman, there'd be nothing left of her. Mm-hmm. Right? They take me to jail. No, before they take me to jail, they're like, hey, we know you have guns. Where are they? Because all my guns were registered to my name. So I had guns in our bedroom. And at the time, this was a year ago, there was a lot of robberies happening in our area. A lot. Like, we're hearing about it on the neighbor app all the time. So I stockpiled on guns. And I was like, if anything happens, I'm going to protect my family. You know, mm-hmm. I took Paulina to the range. I taught her how to use guns. We would go practice so she'd be comfortable just in case, God forbid, anything happened. As a irresponsible gun owner, I didn't realize that my guns need to be in a safe, right? So I had guns stored around our bedroom. So in case anything pops off, she can get access to the gun quickly. I can get access to the gun quickly, and we could protect ourselves. So I had guns in the closet. I had guns in my nightstand, but our closet and our bedroom had a lock on it. And the kids were never allowed. They knew never to come into the bedroom unless they're with mommy, Mikey, or the housekeeper. Mm-hmm. So, they walked out with my arsenal of guns. And, you know, the next day, Paulina bails me out because they wouldn't let me out on my own recognizance. They bailed me out. She bailed me out with my brother. They came together. And I found out I had 14 charges against me. Now, not one of the charges was a felony, right? And a battery, which domestic violence is considered a battery, is a felony, mm-hmm. right? So when the cop was writing up his report, I guess he wrote it in a way where everything was being charged as a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. And I later found out, because I had to get an attorney, that anytime the police are called to a domestic violence case, one of the people that are involved in this domestic violence case have to be arrested. And this happened after the O.J. Simpson trial, because O.J.'s wife and that other poor guy got murdered because when they came to arrest O.J., they didn't because of his clout and who he was. So after that incident, the new law is that if the police are called on any type of disturbance between cohabitants, that someone has to get arrested. So they arrested me.
Right. And
me and Paulina, we stayed together for 9 months after the incident. Mm-hmm. And when the news broke, where the internet found out about the situation, you know, her family got involved, my family got involved, her friends, my friends. And then it just blew up into something that now was another added
stress on your relation.
That stress on her, stress on me. And it just, we decided, hey, why don't we just take a little break? I'll move out and we'll figure it out. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And then we drifted apart. I got my day in court. The charges were dismissed.
All of them?
All of them. But what they did was, because the DA didn't like the fact that I had my gun stored improperly, mm-hmm. they made me do community service, take parenting classes because I was being a bad parent because I had these guns stored irresponsibly, and gun classes.
Okay.
So I had to do these three courses in order for the charges to all be dropped.
And just to clarify for me and everyone, so the things that they were following through with were the gun charges, not with the domestic violence or the battery charge?
They wanted to push this domestic violence thing on me so bad. And Paulina's like, dude, I don't know what, we'd never been in trouble, but there was no hitting. We were arguing with each other. I would never hit her. I would never, ever hit a woman. And it's crazy because when the news broke, Jessica reached out to me, my ex-wife. Three of my ex-girlfriends reached out to me. Girls I dated from years ago, from when I lived in Vegas, called me and like, dude, I know this is total bullshit. You would never hurt anybody. Anyone who knows me knows I would never do something like that, ever. Especially right. with someone who I'm obsessed with. Like, I was fighting with Paulina so she wouldn't smoke hookah so she wouldn't get sick. Mm-hmm.
That's not So to clarify, you may have a temper, but you never hit Paulina.
I've never hit a woman ever in my life. I would never, ever, ever do that. That's something that's, in my eyes, heavily frowned upon.
And she did not claim you hit her, right? She said no, you did
no,
not.
No, no. And then, you know, what my biggest mistake was, though, love, that I disappeared from the internet because I was so embarrassed about what happened that yeah. I wanted to hide under a rock. I'm like, oh my God, the world's going to think I hit her.
Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed for me. First for Paulina, because this poor girl's name is now being pulled through the mud about being this battered woman. And then secondly for me and then my entire family, her entire family, because now we have the stigma like, oh, he hit her. And the internet's cruel. So they talk shit and they want to create clickbait. So everyone's picking it up. And it was on every single tabloid you could think of. Mm-hmm. The TMZ, to In Touch, to Us Week, everywhere. And one made it bigger than the other.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we actually went to Mexico together a few months after the incident, and some loser piece of shit started taking videos and pictures of us. I didn't, unbeknownst to us, we didn't know, mm-hmm. on the beach. I thought I was safe. We went to the beach. I'm hanging out with Paulina and her kids, who were like my children. I would call them my kids. It was never like, oh, they're your children. Like, our kids, our babies, the babies, you know, I really, truly love them. And I still do. And I was holding my little girl because the sand was hot. And Paulina's walking with her son behind us. And someone snapped a picture of us walking. You know, we're putting our head down so like people won't, because I didn't want to attract attention. Mm-hmm. And we're walking. And then the tabloids were like, oh, Mike and Paulina were on a lavish Mexico trip, but very minimal PDA and all this other nonsense. They fluffed it all up to make it into something it's not. When in reality, the reason why I wasn't walking with Paulina and holding her is because I was holding the baby so her feet don't burn.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so it's just wild how the internet works and how they want to blow shit up.
Yeah. So what is your status with Paulina now? You said you guys went your separate ways. Do you guys speak? What's going on with you two?
for months when we separated, it was like, I love you. I miss you. You know, you're my king. No one will ever replace you. And, you know, I would talk to her the same way. And I sent her flowers for Valentine's Day this last year, even though we weren't together. And she texted me, my heart will always belong to you. And me and her had a really incredible connection. She was just my person, you know. She'd be thinking something and I would say, she's like, oh my God, I was just thinking that. Or if I was craving some type of food, she wanted to, I was like, Mexican food? She's like, yes. Or, hey, let's go shopping. My mom was, yes. Or, you know, she'd be like, hey, I just want to stay in tonight. I was like, absolutely, me too. It's like, we just, it was very cohesive. It was just incredible. But these outside sources, like the show, created so much difficult, angry energy between us. Mm-hmm. It was like this elephant in the room that, it just caused unnecessary damage to our relationship.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I think we've established that it may have worked had you not been part of a reality show with your relationship involved. Would you ever do another reality show?
Unequivocally, yes, it would have for sure lasted if there wasn't a show, because I wouldn't have had, well, if... I made mistakes though, so I want to own that. Like, I should never have texted that girl.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't have had the temptation.
Or the clout that someone would want to jump in my DM and like want to be with me. And I still to this day have never heard from the girl again from that day after she texted Paulina our messages and became the side chick. So I don't know if it was a setup thing or what, but I have my doubts, because she reached out to one person on the show. Out of everyone on the show, she didn't reach out to me or the producer. She reached out to this one person, one of my castmates, and was voicing her unhappiness about why she made it on the show and why they made her look a certain way and all this stuff. So I have my doubts of why this person appeared in my life and who they were, but that's not here nor there. It was an amazing learning experience, and it won't happen again, because the level of loss that I experienced losing this person who was my person and losing these children who I loved and adored, definitely was not worth the few minutes of excitement and feeling these dopamine hits in my head because someone found me attractive and I was having like just these conversations that were just exciting.
So yeah.
It's a great lesson. Great lesson, a hard one, an expensive one, a good one.
Now that summer is over and my daughter is going back to school, I've always seemed to be running around from one thing to another, but I still make it a priority to eat healthy, and Green Chef is my savior. Not only are their meals delicious, but they are the number one meal kit for eating clean. They have nutritionist-approved recipes with incredible ingredients, no artificial colors or sweeteners, and have limited processed ingredients. The best part is there are over 80 weekly options to choose from, so you will never be bored. There are calorie smart and plant-based options, Mediterranean, protein-packed, and gluten-free. With Green Chef, you can satisfy all your cravings and still eat healthy. And with their new quick and easy recipes that are ready in 25 minutes or less, it's the perfect solution for when I'm busy at work and I can't find the time. With step-by-step recipes, pre-proportioned and prepped ingredients, Green Chef just makes my life so much easier, and it's delivered right to your door. It cannot get better than that. So this week I got a big box. It had sort of an Asian flair to it, and I made myself for lunch spicy beef and broccoli noodle bowls. It was so good. I had a second one that I made the next day for dinner. I absolutely loved it. The cooking time was 20 minutes. The calories per serving were 700. And it was so good. My daughter loved it enough that she wanted to try cooking. So the next day, she made cheesy artichoke chicken sandwiches and also the sesame shrimp noodle bowls. And let me tell you, she was doing like TikToks and all excited that she was now a chef. And she documented the 20 minutes she spent cooking and how good the food was. And she asked me when we were getting our next box. So if that isn't a ringing endorsement, I don't know what is. That people of all ages, from someone who's 11 to me, who's middle-aged, would love eating this food. I'm so excited to get my next box. So for 50% off, you guys, go to greenchef.com/understood50 and use code understood50 to get 50% off plus free shipping. That's greenchef.com/understood50 and use code understood50 to get 50% off plus free shipping. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. So, Mike, what do you think about the state of reality TV right now? As we all know, you know, there's been a lawsuit, I guess is what they're calling it, that Bethany is the front person with Mark Garagos and other lawyers against NBC and Bravo. What are your thoughts on this whole state of affairs and the reality reckoning that they're talking about?
Bethany beat me to it. And she's a very, very smart woman. I have a lot of respect for her. She is incredibly intelligent, took this platform and created a monster business around it. I tip my hat to her, and she's someone that I admire. And when you're that big on a reality show, when your name is synonymous with the show, mm-hmm. you get preferential treatment from the network. You get preferential treatment from the production company. So imagine if she's coming out and saying, they didn't treat us right. We should be unionized. They're taking advantage of us. Mm-hmm. Imagine how the little guy who just started on a reality show or who was an add-on got treated.
Yeah.
Yes, there's hierarchy and they definitely don't treat us with the respect we deserve. Typically if you're in a hostile environment and you want to leave that hostile environment, typically people let you go. Mm-hmm. But in reality TV, they follow you. You take your microphone on. You take your microphone off. I'm done. I'm leaving. Fuck this. They'll follow you all the way to the car to get your reaction and make sure they take that little bit of dignity you still may have left. And they're going to fucking steal that from you. Because we want to make sure that people that we have good footage that people are going to watch and they want to see you storm off.
Right. Right.
They don't talk about what triggered you. They talk about your actions. Right.
And that's such an interesting thing to think about, because at some point, you know, again, I've done this not in such a big way that you did, but I know you feel this connection to producers. There's usually one or two that you get really close to and you feel like they get you or you really like them. And then all of a sudden, when you see that they're not stepping in, it's almost, you know, you feel like you're let down. Do you know?
Two producers stick out. Actually, three. One of them was Persian. Mm-hmm. Persian gay guy that would play up the butchness when he needed to and played up the hey bitch and that type of shit when he needed to. So he knew exactly how to get what he wanted from you. And then we had another one, also a gay dude, that knew exactly how to, and it doesn't matter their sexuality. It's just, they knew when to be cute and fun and you didn't take it in a way where it was like, he was being aggressive with you.
Yeah.
And then he knew when to butch it up and fucking reprimand you. And these two guys were two of the most manipulative human beings I've ever met in my entire life. Mm. Both producers of the show. The un-Persian one was the producer for the last few seasons of our show. And he did a phenomenal job. Like, he has a triple PhD in bamboozling and getting people to do what they want. And he got Paulina eating out of the palm of his hands, like a little rabbit. And he would just be in her ear. Hey, babe, we need you to get on the show. You need to say what you need to say because, you know, Mike's doing this and Mike's saying that behind my back. And I was living with Paulina and she wouldn't tell me. I was like, babe, who are you talking to? Right? And he was manipulating her behind the scenes. And that's why she got on the show and was like, yeah, I'm done with Mike. I'm done. No, I'm done. And I'd go home and, you know, she's like, I'm sorry, babe. I shouldn't have done that. I know. And then we would make up and I couldn't get mad at her because I know, because they were doing the same thing to me. And I was a seasoned fucking vet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they almost lure you in of like, well, if you don't go back, I mean, this is your chance to give your narrative, to tell your story in your words. But then, you know, you come on there and you get provoked in all sorts of ways and it gets, you know, and then it gets edited later. So it's not really your words, even though, you know, you're saying to an extent what you want to, but it's like turned on you.
Well, you make a facial gesture like, or, you know, you do like an eye roll and they'll take that and put it somewhere where it wasn't even part of that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Or right. What they call wild. We need you to come and do a wild line. Mm-hmm. A wild line. Yeah. Just go into a quiet place and say this. Hey, Reza, that was fucked up that you did that. Was that good? No, do it again. There was an echo. Hey, Reza, that was fucked up that you did that. Right. And they'll fucking put it in the show wherever they wanted to create that scene to make it seem like you were fighting with them.
Right. Okay. Well, wait. So you do bring up a good point. So you get involved in this like you're an actor kind of, and you're doing these scenes.
I'm Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah. Better looking Brad Pitt. But the thing is that, you know, what do you think about these allegations where people are saying, well, I was made to drink a lot and behave in ways that I never would. And it was, you know, borderline abusive. And I was doing these things that I was forced to do. But like you're saying, they're asking you to do things to create scenes. You know, what do you say to those critics that will say, but you did all these things on your own. How could you blame other people for your actions?
Absolutely. And some of the people on the show would happily and openly do things that were horrible. They would cut their own mother's throats if they were asked to, because they wanted to keep the show alive.
Yeah.
And there were certain people that wouldn't, but could be coerced to, because, you know, for instance, this producer I was talking about, we'd be filming and we'd be there for a few hours and he's standing there, right? And he's watching and it's not playing out the way in his mind it should. Mm-hmm. And I can't even tell you how many times he'd throw off his earpiece like this, like, okay, cameras down. Guys, you know what? Let's just go home. Forget it. Guys, take a five. Forget it. You guys don't want to make a good show. Forget it. That's okay. Do you think anyone cares about this bullshit? Just like that. I'm like, what do you mean? Okay, let me remind you, and you just do that like a little aggressive bitch. Like, let me remind you, okay? Last time we were here, Reza said this about you, and you said this about MJ, and Gigi was in the corner with a knife, and Nima was picking his nose. Do you remember this? No. Well, remember it. I was like, oh shit, okay. Like, he's not telling me what to say.
Yeah. But he's serving it to you on a platter.
Listen, motherfucker, like, do you want to get out of here or do you want to film until tomorrow morning? Hurry up. And then Reza would get pissed off. He's like, guys, come on. These checks don't come cheap. Let's go. And, you know, he was the godfather of the show because he was so outrageous and so good. He was always on. Mm-hmm. And that's what I respected about him, that he was always on. And he knew how to carry the show in a way that was fun and light, and he knew when to bring the drama and when to act like an asshole and when to be cool. And so it was like, okay, I get it. Okay, I'll follow your lead.
Right.
And we just go down this rabbit hole of just insanity. And then imagine filming for 8 hours and going home. Mm. Fucking frazzled.
Yeah.
You're frazzled. You're like, holy shit. Like, I just got into a war. And then you have the anxiety of that moment. Then you have the anxiety when you sit down months later and you're doing your confessional because you know now where the show is going to head because they're asking questions in particular to a certain situation that you thought would make it on the cutting room floor, hopefully. And then the third time again, when the show comes out, now you have to relive it, but not just between you and your friends who knows why that shit went down, but now the entire world who's watching is now blowing up your social, blowing up your email, crank calling you, in the streets talking to you. So it's a really difficult it's a really difficult position to be in. So yeah. I understand why people are upset, because in the moment you're drinking where the alcohol is flowing freely, mm-hmm. right? And they'll keep on bringing it because you'll keep consuming it because you want to numb yourself so that you can create what hopefully won't make it, but may, but you'll deal with it later. But you're so induced in alcohol and fear and anxiety and peer pressure that you do shit that you may have not wanted to do. And right. it's time that someone pulls back the curtains and says, nah, that's not fair. You can't fucking treat us like that. Yes, we are reality stars. And yes, you guys are paying us well, but damn, you're taking away our dignity. You're taking away our true expression, editing something to be what it's not. And then we're having to cope with it for not just the three times that I said, but for years to come, because now people are being able to watch it on Peacock and YouTube, and just, it's going to play forever. Right? Mm-hmm. And then people's perception of you and their thoughts are you're that person, which you're really not.
And that to me is like what I think is worth the most money, kind of. Like if your reputation is going to be damaged or there's going to be a stigma that goes with you for years to come because the show is rerun and you cannot get away with that, that to me is what's most damaging. Like if I'm going to look like this and have a scarlet letter on my head for all these years, it better be worth something because I'm not doing that for free.
Now that leads me to a question for you. If I paid you residuals, would that be worth it?
I mean, it eases the pain because that's something you signed up for, right? Yeah. At the beginning, you signed up for being on the show. You knew what reality shows are about, but you know, now in hindsight, you look at how it's affected your life, whether or not you're getting the deals you want to get. People are reaching out to you to get those multi-million dollar houses because they know you, they want to be friends with you. Or are they like, this guy's a jerk. This guy, you know, is a cheater. It's affecting your relationship so you can't get married to someone because they think you're always going to cheat on them. I would be like, fuck that. That's worth money to me then because I have to live with this.
Yes.
To me that... I mean, I get it. I get it. It's hard.
And I think that's completely fair. You know, we should be compensated. Right?
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to ask you about. So Bethany was on a podcast this morning on her podcast. She said over 100 reality stars have reached out to her personally and to the lawyers. So I want to clarify something because I think there's a lot of rumors on the internet. So there's a movement to create a union going forward, but is there also something where all these reality stars are coming out of the woodwork because they're looking to get some sort of back pay or they're looking to have some monetary value come into play for what they've gone through? Like, do you know what this lawsuit will turn into?
So from some reliable sources, there is about 100 reality people who have reached out to Mark Garagos, mm-hmm. who I'm very surprised is taking on a case like this because he deals with very high profile people and celebrities and cases. But obviously he sees something here where there's promise that there is a case.
Yeah.
And you know, if it was one or two people, you could say they were lying and there may be some misconception of what really happened. But when 100 people come forward and all their stories are the same, they are trying to find compensation for the damages that they suffered throughout the years on being on these shows where they are alleging that they were in hostile environments, that they weren't getting fed, they were being induced by alcohol, and they weren't protecting certain people. And there was some, I don't know, sexual things that were sexual misbehavior. That never yeah. happened on our show, the sexual misbehavior. But we had to beg for food. We're like, we're hungry. Okay, you guys will eat later. You have to film right now. Tons of alcohol. I mean, you bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles. And deprivation of sleep. They would not let us sleep. It didn't matter if I had my door locked and I was, if we were traveling as a group and we were staying in a house together and I had my door locked, mm-hmm. they had a key to my door and they would open the door and come in and film. And I'm laying there, could be naked, clothes on, dead asleep, 3 a.m, 5 a.m, did not matter. If things were popping off in the rest of the house and my name came up, I had to be involved.
Right.
Imagine if you're dead asleep and you get woken up to a camera, you're like, oh shit, I have to be on.
Right.
Right. And it's just, and that just, that leads to exhaustion and you're not using your brain because you're brain dead. You're sleeping. You're tired.
Mm-hmm. Now, but I'm curious, what if you jump on this bandwagon and the person that is like next to you that also is complaining about this stuff is somebody from like Summer House or Winter House, where that whole show, I don't know if you've seen it. I really haven't, but I know the premise of it. And I know that a lot of them, you watch these two go in and sleep with each other and they're with five different people on the show. And that's kind of the premise of the show. What if these people are the same type of people saying that this is something they want to be a part of, that they want to jump on the Team Bethany, you know, route? Do you believe that those people are in the same boat as someone like you or someone who's really been through something abusive?
It's not for me to say, I don't know. You know, I'm sure they're typecasted and they're people that have liberal views of sleeping with each other. I'm mm-hmm. sure of that. None of them are coming in and being like super conservative, like Christians and Jews and saying, I will not sleep with anybody, and they get casted. They're obviously casted for a reason because they go through several questions before they get casted for these shows. But that doesn't mean that because someone is promiscuous, that they could be mistreated or not given a safe, secure environment to work in to create a show.
That's super important.
Absolutely. You know, regardless, we just have to have decency for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a 21-year-old chick comes on a show and says, fuck it, I want to have fun. And, you know, this is my summer to live it up. And I just broke up with Johnny and I want to sleep with everyone in this house. God bless her. That's her life. But that doesn't mean they could deprive her of food and, you know, shove alcohol down her throat, you know, to make her act a certain way.
Yeah.
If she is a normal state of mind and she decides that she wants to do these things, more power to her. I'm not judging her. But that's not for the network to induce. And if they are, then they should be liable for it. Right.
I think that's important.
It's up to a jury to decide if this goes to that far, if this person who's making these claims is telling the truth and if she has a case or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not for us to judge or for Mark Garagos to judge. It's on the jury. And I think it won't even get to that point though. I think that Bravo, because they know, because they get all the raw footage, they know exactly what happens and they've turned a blind eye to it and they've been able to capitalize it for years and years and years and years and years. And now there's a power in numbers. 100 people coming forward, they're going to settle and they're going to pay out big. And I think we're going to see a change in format of how these reality shows are filmed and produced. And it's going to protect people like me who got started on a show who were down and out, thought this was an opportunity, and decided to do whatever it takes to make a good show.
So I have to ask you then, have you reached out to Mark Garagos or to Bethany to be part of this?
I've spoken to Bethany, I think just in passing throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to Mark Garagos. I initially called him to speak to him regarding my DV case because when the police officer came into my house and told my fiance at the time that he never liked me and he would watch my show. That's bias, right? You can't judge me because of who you think I am on a show, right? And then make false accusations against me. And then told her, don't look at me like this. I have a gold Rolex too. This is just my side gig, right? So I called Mark and when I decided to come out of hiding, I called him, I was like, hey man, just recently, I want to go after this cop for civil, you know, for civil harassment because of what he did and the way he treated me. And that's when he told me, he's like, there's a statute of limitations that where these recordings only last for 6 months and it's been longer than 6 months, you don't have really a case or else I would love to take it on. And then I was like, what's going on with this reality stuff? And you know, he's like, you should be a part of it. I know you. You have a bunch of fans in my office. I like you. I think you're a good dude. And the way they treated you wasn't cool. And we had a minute conversation about it. And I'm a little torn whether I want to be a part of it or not. But because I respect you and I think you're so adorable and you're like, you knew exactly how to get me onto your show. I wanted to talk to you about these things because I feel bad for future people that want to be on reality TV. I get a lot of calls from people. Hey man, they want to do the show about me. What do you think? I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. And some people are like, oh, this guy's an asshole. He doesn't want me being on television because he wants all the clout. But in reality, I want them to know what they're signing up for. And I'll sit down with them and I'll tell them, hey, this is what's going to happen. So me being on the show with you, is to just voice my reality and what happened in my life and with this case with Paulina, and to warn future people who want to be on reality TV that it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Will you ever do a reality show again if they form a union, if you're a little more protected?
I will not do another Shaws of Sunset formatted show where it's a lifestyle show. I would do more of like a business one where it would follow me and my business in real estate with my CBD line, with my public speaking, stuff like that, that resonates with me, mm-hmm. and where I can make a difference in a world. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to be an entertainer. I'm not a clown. I don't want you to watch TV and forget about your problems because you're watching the problems that I have.
Right.
I want to leave you inspired. I want to leave you better than I found you. And if I can't do that, then there's no point. I've already done that.
Yeah. So just to be succinct, I just want to know what you think is the most misunderstood thing about you.
Somehow after the first few seasons, how they portrayed me to be this person that has anger issues. No, I don't lead with anger. I'm very protective. I'm very passionate. Mm-hmm. I protect people I love. You are my friend. I just met you. But if someone tried to hurt you, I would protect you because that's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. It's a funny story that I want to share with you. I was at the gym 2 weeks ago and this cute Indian girl walks up and I go, is that Shanti Garanathan? I went to school with her when I was in the fifth grade and I still remembered her face because it hasn't changed much. She walks up and she goes, Mike? I go, hey, Shanti? She goes, yeah. And she's walking up with a guy and she tells her husband, whatever his name is, this is Mike Shohead. Mike Shohead has the biggest heart you'll ever see in your life. In the fifth grade, people used to pick on me. And Mike was one of the cool kids. And he would protect me and the other people that were getting picked on. And I'll never forget that. We are almost 45 years old. 5 years, fifth grade, you're what? 12, 11? All these years, I have not seen her. And she still remembered. And like a fucking weirdo, I started tearing at the gym and I hugged her and I was like, that is the sweetest thing ever. And I'm so happy that you remembered that about me. And her husband high-fived me. He's like, oh, that's really cool, man. I appreciate that. And shout out to Shanti Garanathan for really touching my heart. Cause that's always the person I've been. I'm very protective. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately there was this misconception that I'm not that person and I'm super soft on the inside. I'm a little too emotional sometimes.
Mm. Like I said before, I think you just like to feel understood and that's what like gets to your heart.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. All right. So just quickly tell me, what is your relationship now like with Reza, Gigi and MJ?
I have not talked to them in a long time. I'm not talking in a long time. We kind of drifted apart. The show really took a toll on us. This last season was very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. I felt very ganged up on. I felt very betrayed. People did things behind the scene that hurt me. But if they ever called me and needed a helping hand or if there's anything I can ever do for them, I would do it gladly because mm-hmm. I can't erase that love I had for them, even though we may not be fond of each other at times. But amazing people, when they want to be. And they can also, you know, be really cruel and not nice when they want to be too. So after 10 years of sharing that space together so intimately, we needed a break. So MJ reaches out once in a while. I'm so proud of her. She's kicking ass. Her son is doing amazing. She's still married. They're happy. I know Reza's crushing it. I was actually at his father's funeral when his dad passed away. Gigi, I've not spoken to in a long time. Nima, I chat with every so often. Me and Shervin are very tight. We're like the Persian Hans and Franz, you know?
Yes, I remember. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so when we hang out, everyone's like, are you guys brothers? We're like, no. Mm. So we hang out and he's crushing it. So yeah, I've really lost touch with a lot of people in my life. Once the situation happened with me and Paulina, I kind of became a recluse.
Yeah.
And I realized I have to go back to being a one-man show and really building myself up back and really becoming a person of integrity, a person who leads with kindness, a person who is empathetic and loving, and really find myself. So I just went back into the lab and just worked on myself. And now I'm slowly, you know, getting my head out of the shell and connecting with old friends again.
And I have to ask, because I'm sure a lot of ladies will be wondering, what is your dating status at the moment?
Since my breakup with Paulina, I dated a really incredible girl, super smart, sweetheart of a person, just all around amazing. But she could sense, she's like, you're here, but you're not present. And I need you to be present. And I couldn't lie to her. I wasn't mentally prepared to move on. I tried physically a few times and that was cool, but it didn't make me feel better about myself. So I stopped that. And then when I tried to be mentally involved with somebody, because I wasn't fully over Paulina, I just decided that she's right and we should stop talking. So I'm single, just working on myself. And I think when the time is right, the universe will put the right person in my life, a podcaster that lives in Florida.
Hair thinning impacts all of us. In fact, over half of us will experience hair thinning. It's not only common, it's normal. Join the thousands of people who are standing up for their strands by doing something about it with Nutrafol. Have you noticed that your hair isn't looking as healthy as it used to? I am. Maybe you're starting to see more of your scalp or you're self-conscious about thinning patches. It can be frustrating, but with Nutrafol, you don't have to just accept it. You can do something about it. Let me tell you something. I am someone who has sort of been known for my hair my entire life. But if you didn't know this by now, I have been wearing extensions for over 10 years. I'm so excited to try Nutrafol because I feel confident that I'm giving myself a chance to start growing my hair and be helped and be doing something inside out for the healthiness of my hair. And the goal is to eventually not have to wear extensions. So I'm really excited to see what this does for me. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended growth supplement, clinically shown to improve hair growth, visible thickness, and strength. Nutrafol's physician formulated hair growth supplements uses science-backed ingredients. Their drug-free patented technology provides consistent, reliable results. Thinning hair is different for men and women. Nutrafol has multiple unique formulas to provide exactly what their body and hair needs to grow based on your biology, age, and other lifestyle factors. Go to Nutrafol.com to take their hair health wellness quiz, identify causes of your thinning hair, and Nutrafol will give you a personalized plan for better hair health throughout the whole body. Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting root causes of thinning, stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health. And it works. In clinical studies, they're saying 72% of men saw more scalp coverage after taking Nutrafol's men hair growth supplement for 6 months. And 86% of women saw an improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. Take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UNDERSTOOD. Find out why over 4,000 healthcare professionals recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled NutraFol.com, promo code UNDERSTOOD.
All right, and tell people where they can find...
You're like,
No, I knew what you were saying. I don't want anyone to be jealous.
Yeah, me too.
So where can people find you? What are you doing? Tell us what you're doing right now with your life.
So selling real estate, we're one of the top five agents in the company. Our team is crushing it. I work with a girl named Victoria Cruz, who's just the sweetest, kindest person you could meet. And then she could be a fucking pit bull and she'll bite your head off, you know? So she's one of those girls where she's crushing it and we're working together. So it's Victoria Cruz Homes and Showhead Estates. We've teamed up and we're one of the top teams in the company called Equity Union, selling real estate. Mm-hmm. I have a CBD line.
Wait, before you talk about your CBD line, I'm just so curious. In California, in the LA area, there are all these companies. There's like Mauricio's company. There's the Oppenheimer brothers. There's, you know, Matt and Josh. Like, how do you guys have enough places to sell? Are you guys running into each other? How does that all work?
Yeah, the cream rises to the top. Josh and Matt are two of my best friends. The Altman brothers, they are incredible real estate agents. They're crushing it. Mm-hmm. The Oppenheimer Group is what they're called, not Oppenheimer Brothers, by the way.
Sorry.
Shout out to them. those guys have some agents that, you know, the 80-20 rule, you know, 80% don't do shit, 20 do. And the 20% are the ones who are running LA. And luckily I'm part of that 20%. Some people may think, you know, they're like, oh, it's because of the show. Okay, the show has been gone for 2 years. If you don't have hustle, if you're not out there knocking on doors and making calls and networking and meeting people, you're not going to make any money.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much clout you have. People don't just call me out of the blue and say, hey, will you sell my home? Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to just network. So there's a shortage of inventory, but there's also a shortage of people who really want to do the work.
Yeah.
Right? So the Altman brothers are always on.
Yeah.
They're my really dear friends, you know?
Yeah, I've known them for years. They're the greatest guys. Close with Matt. I just love him.
Oh, Matt's the best. He's hilarious. So yeah, they work very hard. I work very hard. And, we're out there competing for the business. And, you know, we win some, we lose some. And that's just how it works. But yeah, I think we have 600 agents in our office.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Amongst 11 offices. Yeah. So not all of them are doing anything. Some of them, you know, work part-time. Some just want a license and they don't do anything.
Yeah.
Some they're really crushing it.
Right. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you. And now tell me about your CBD line.
So I'm a huge advocate for psychedelics and mushrooms. I microdose daily. Have you ever taken mushrooms?
I have not.
No? Oh my God.
I'm so interested in it now that I did that podcast with Jay Godfrey a couple weeks ago about ketamine.
Podcast, by the way. Great podcast. I loved it. I listened to it. You did an amazing job.
Thank you.
Yeah. People have this misconception about psychedelics and how, you know, you do it to get high. But if you take it like medicine, it'll eradicate the use of Xanax and all these other over-the-counter man-made pills that are toxic for you. You know, this mm-hmm. stuff grows from the earth. If God didn't want you to have it, it wouldn't be here, right? And it comes from Mother Nature. And so I'm a huge advocate for it. This is the line, by the way. This is our gummies. So we do microdose gummies. And I take a gummy a day and it takes the edge off and I love it. And I think it's going to be, it's not legal, but it's been decriminalized. So I think eventually what we're going to see is that it's going to be, I think LSD and mushrooms are going to become legal here soon, just like marijuana has become. And people are going to really see the benefits and it's going to help a lot of people battling their depression, anxiety, sleeplessness, you know, and an array of other issues that people have. So I've been pushing for that, pushing for legislation to make psychedelics legal. And what else do I do? That's pretty much it. I'm going to start a podcast, actually. I decided, yeah.
Do you have a name for it?
We're working on a couple of names. I'll let you know when I come up with it.
Okay. People can DM you some suggestions.
Understood.
Yes, I would love that. Mr. and Mrs. Understood. You can, there we go. You can do it with me. You can be my co-host.
Oh, I'd love that. You can cry.
Yeah. So I wish you the best of luck. I'm so happy that you took the opportunity to come tell your story with me. I think, you know, you have explained yourself in a way that anyone would be really interested to, you know, follow your path, would want to know your version of the story and really feel like they understand you now. At least I do. And it's been an honor and a pleasure. And I wish you the best of luck.
I can easily say I'm so happy that I came on and I chatted with you. You were awesome. You made me feel very comfortable. I appreciate that you gave me the platform to just tell my side of the story. People are misunderstood, and that's just the way society is. And until I always tell people, if you don't hear it from my mouth and you don't see it with your eyes and hear it with your ears, don't believe it, because anyone can make up anything about you. So I'm glad I'm here. This is a great platform for people to come on and not be misunderstood anymore. So I appreciate that you allowed me to do that.
Absolutely. And a shout out to Mike Schnediger, our friend in Las Vegas. If you guys ever go to Tao, you have to call him because he will help you get in.
Yeah. He's the man. He runs that behemoth of a company.
He sure does. All right, Mike, take care. And I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.